Strangers Stopping Strangers. This is the podcast number 20. Thank you so much for tuning in. Welcome back to anybody who's returning, and thanks for checking it out to anybody who's new this week. This week's podcast is really fun and exciting. I know I say that with all of them, but I mean, quite honestly, they're all really fun and exciting. And this week's podcast is with Scott Guberman. And Scott Guberman is a musician. He's a keyboardist. And he tells his story about, you know, getting into the music and how he got started playing music and listening to The Dead, its first concert. And then he went on to, you know, play music with some really talented people throughout the East Coast. And a couple of years ago, you know, him and his really supportive wife decided that, you know, the only way to really make his dreams become fully realized is to move to the West Coast and the Bay Area. And that was where he was going to get his chance to play with some of the core Dead members. So a night at Terrapin led into another day at Terrapin, which led into the rest of his story, which really is pure magic. So this is really fun. And well, on the podcast, I always play music that's, you know, if not Grateful Dead, you know, related, inspired. And on this podcast, it's going to be all Scott's music. So we're going to hear from Scott Guberman Band. We're going to hear from Stu Ellen and Friends. And then we're going to hear a solo Dark Star that he plays and sings. So very, very cool. Excited to share it. And I'm doing this one week after the last. So I'm not sure what the overall operating rhythms are of the podcast, once a week, twice a month, but we made this and it made it quick, and I was just really excited to share it. So this is going to come out a little early, and hopefully for Christmas I might keep them going once a week. And you know, they're always available on the website www.strangersstoppingstrangers, and the companion guide, which is the music only guide, is available there too. So if you like what you're hearing, check on in, check out the podcast archives, and thank you again for checking in and listening and enjoying, and we'll catch you soon.
Awesome, Scott. Thank you so much for joining Strangers Stopping Strangers.
Thank you very much for having me.
No, I'm really excited to have you on as a guest. When I reached out for you, I didn't know if I'd hear back, and then I did, and you've just been so awesome. I'm excited to meet you and talk to you and hear your story and share it with everyone.
Yeah, cool. I'm excited to share it. Excited
very,
to be here.
Okay, well, let's hear from the beginning. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your early interest in music and some of your early stories, and then how you got into The Dead and what sucked you in?
Sure. Well, I've been, you know, playing piano pretty much all my life. As far as I can remember, I grew up with a piano in the house. Most of the music I listened to growing up, which was on Long Island, was on the heavier side, Led Zeppelin, Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath, and, you know, some 80s rock, hair bands, but, you know, stuff that was, you know, guitarist who played fast and, you know, that sort of thing. I was always intrigued as a musician as a sort of spectator to see guys who were well accomplished, well practiced and polished. So that's what drew me to that sort of music. It's also what was fashionable and popular at the time. But that all changed when I saw a Grateful Dead show in 1988 at Madison Square Garden. Happened to be with a couple of friends of mine who I used to go see concerts with pretty much all the time. We'd go to any rock band that was playing live, you know, Nassau Coliseum or Madison Square Garden, being this, you know, it's pretty local to where we live. And this weekend, the Grateful Dead happened to be coming through town. A friend of mine had tickets, said, "You want to go?" I said, "Sure." What I knew of the Grateful Dead was through my cousins who were Deadheads, but that's all I knew. They bought me Shakedown Street, the album, for my birthday when I was a young kid. I listened to it about twice. It sounded like a mixture of country and disco to me. And you know, I kind of dismissed it after that. I don't think I ever really listened much to it other than what I heard on the radio after that. So here I was going to this concert thinking that I was going to see such a band. But, you know, nonetheless looking forward to it. Friend of ours who knew we were going gave us mescaline to take when we got there. I had no idea there'd be any connection. Obviously, he did. We thought we'd be the only ones tripping there, you know. And we quickly found out that was different. What I experienced when I was there was, other than talking to people and realizing that they were all on some sort of psychedelic drug too, was that this was a show that was a modern acid test, so to speak, a real modern psychedelic experience. Just couldn't find anywhere else. By the time they were playing Drums and Space in the middle of the second set, they put the full use the quadraphonic sound system that they had, which mm-hmm. is a set of four speakers, four sets of speakers, the two that you used to on either side of the stage, and then two that are in the rear of the arena. And so by the time Drums and Space came, they had sounds that were essentially circling around the audience, all sorts of, like, you hear things behind you, in front of you, behind you again. And, I mean, this was just a true psychedelic experience and such a difference from whatever concert I saw the week before at Nassau Coliseum, which might have been Motley Crue or something, where, you know, this, just like every other concert, the singer would speak into the microphone between songs, but you couldn't even decipher what was going on, which was largely due to a lack of expertise with the sound system, sound technology, but also the audience being so loud in between. You know, here was a band that was playing with immense dynamics to the point where they would get super quiet, super loud, super quiet too, and when they did, you could hear a pin drop in the audience, and this was a new experience for me, a captured, attentive audience. I was hanging on the edge of their seat, waiting for the next note. It was just, you know, the experience I knew I needed to be involved in forever after that. So, you know, that essentially was what got me into the Grateful Dead, was being there for the first time.
Well, there's like a magic that goes along with it. And it really is the difference between going to a concert and partying and having a few drinks and like knocking some back and being tuned out and going to a Dead show, whether it's, you know, whether you're sober, smoking weed or doing hallucinogenics. I think the ultimate goal is just to really be tuned in and to be connected with the music and connected with the people. I've never had any drinks. I mean, I've had a couple beers, but drinking has never been synonymous with a Dead show to me, because I feel like that's, you know, about, like, you're dulling your senses and being there. You want to remember every second and just be hyper involved. So, I mean, I'm imagining you at Madison Square Garden with just a wind tunnel of music and energy around, and it is magical, really. You know, it's like nothing else.
It is absolutely like nothing else, and I completely agree with you. I can remember, you know, not too long before seeing that Grateful Dead show, being at a Metallica show and watching a couple guys who were, you know, vomiting and passed out and that sort of thing. And, you know, I quickly, you know, realized, hey, you know, these people who are passed out in their seat drunk, literally unconscious, are literally missing the concert experience. They're just not even there for it. So, yeah, it's
interesting. No, absolutely.
Yeah, for me, drinking was never synonymous with any concert going experience. But, you know, the Grateful Dead had, you know, pretty much knew that. There'll be people who will argue with you, especially about that time, because a newer sort of audience started coming in, and there were some drinkers. I saw that. But still, I mean, this was an audience that didn't even compare to those other concerts I was saying. Much more sober audience.
Very cool. So you're a musician and you've always played the keyboard. So from there, you dove into the catalog, started playing, you know, their music and local bands. And tell me a little bit about what happened next.
From there, I mean, that's all I ever wanted to do, somehow play with the Grateful Dead. And, you know, at least some of the members, or, you know, somehow be involved in that music. The most immediate thing I could do is get involved in, you know, local Grateful Dead tribute bands, which luckily there's plenty around the country. In my area, there were a few, and I was playing with, you know, anybody who's, you know, playing that music, you know, for a full show or even just some of it, you know, whoever I could get involved in it, you know, this is something I was going to be doing, and that's what I did. Go ahead.
And you played with the guys from Lobsters from Mars. Now, I just want to pop that in because that was kind of my motivation. Like, that was my personal door opening to wanting to reach out for you. You know, like, I think we were Facebook friends, and, you know, I've met a lot of people in the community, but when I met Rich, and, hey, Rich, you know, and he was telling me about the band, and they've been playing for 30 years, and he was so proud of you. He was like, our keyboardist, Scott, is in California, and he's playing the fill, you know, and they were so proud of, you know, your career and where you've gone and what you're doing, and he was in the next town over, and then that, again, that kind of plays into, you know, what leads us to this day and me reaching out for you. So I feel like your experiences was with my original connection to wanting to reach out and make a connection. So, hey guys.
Hey.
You know, on that.
Yeah, well.
Hey.
Hi, Rich.
I know Rich listens. Hi.
Yeah, Rich is awesome. So is Buddy. They're all the greatest guys, and I always love playing with them and being friends with them. And Buddy was just here not too long ago on the West Coast visiting me. It was just awesome to see him and reminisce and hang out. We went to Haight-Ashbury, hung out, had a real fun experience. It was great.
That's awesome. So you played out here, but your heart is bigger than that. So tell me what led you down the journey to where you are today.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, like I said, my dream has always been to, you know, play with the guys from the Grateful Dead in one form or another. I was lucky enough to get involved on some level with Tom Constantin when I was still out on the East Coast. He was essentially a keyboardist with the Grateful Dead taking over for Pigpen at that time.
Sure.
Overlapping with Pigpen. And I was playing pretty regularly with him. It you know, great, great experience. Still get to see him every once in a while, and we keep in touch. And I did a couple of small tours with Vince Welnick, who was the last keyboardist of Grateful Dead.
Sure.
And that was also on the East Coast. But, you know, my desire to play with, you know, as many guys from the Grateful Dead as possible was really, really strong, especially the core four members that they might be referred to these days. I married an amazing girl, eventually, a few years ago. She was with me in my dreams all the way. We knew I had to do this somehow. You know, I had to do whatever I could to, you know, follow my dreams and, you know, this burning desire I had to play with these guys. And one thing I realized was that, you know, the one thing that the guys had in common who played with these guys from Grateful Dead these days, all of them from the beginning up until now, there's so many of them, they're all from the Bay Area. And so, you know, we said, you know, we got to be out there. You know, let's be out there and, you know, then we'll know we tried, you know, because that's the only way it's going to happen. I tried forever through email and letters before then, you know, and, you know, those guys are really impossible to reach, understandably so. You know, they live private lives. And so I knew if it was going to happen, it might be just something as small of a chance of running into them at a grocery store or something like that. And we said, let's take a vacation and see what happens. My wife was online, and we knew we were going to go out there. She said, let's see what shows are playing. It was the beginning of the recreation shows, which is Phil Lesh, when the 50th anniversary of the Grateful Dead came along, he made a promise to play one show from all 30 years of the Grateful Dead's career over a span of time that would take however long at Terrapin Crossroads. That started January 2nd, 2015. We just finished the last one about 2 weeks ago. My wife was online, you know, knowing we were going to be out there on vacation, the first one, and was able to get tickets, which in retrospect, I realized was so lucky that we were able to get two tickets because, you know, these things usually sell out in minutes. Didn't know it at the time. We just got lucky. So to make a long story short, we flew out here, got to see the first recreation show, which was, again, recreation in 1965. And then the following day, I went, the show was amazing, by the way. And, you know, again, here I am at yet another concert seeing one of the Grateful Dead members and can do nothing but imagine what it would be like to be on the other side playing on stage with Phil. The next day, I went to the bar to see, you know, on the other side of Terrapin Crossroads, and we went to see a couple of guys play for Happy Hour, I believe it was. And Eric DeBerardino was the bassist in that band. He and I had known some people that we mutually worked with. And he said, hey, we're not playing with the keyboards. If you want to jump on stage with us, feel free. I quickly ran out, went to the keyboard, and got on stage. I told both of those guys, and it was just a truly, you know, already, you know, dreams are coming true out here. And it's just wonderful, you know, to be on that stage with Terrapin playing, you know, even at the bar. That led to the other guys in the band saying, hey, you know, we're playing another set tonight. Tomorrow night. Why don't you come down and play with us? I did. Luckily, you know, that was important. The right people at the right time have to be there. The people who are in charge of booking and whatever else have you. And they said, yeah, how long is he out here for? Let's squeeze him into a couple of shows. And I got to do that. We're still out here on vacation. It quickly became apparent that if I just move out here, you know, I'll be able to do this and, you know, sustain myself. And my wife's a trooper. I mean, we both just pretty much picked up and moved immediately. As soon as Terrapin said to me, if you know, they caught wind that I was, you know, wanting to move out here if I had some shows in place that would sustain me. And Terrapin said, you know, come on out. We'll give you what we could. And that was enough for me to, and my wife to do it. We drove out here.
Wow, that's awesome. Where proximity meets destiny, right? Like, it's destiny and proximity all happening at once. Like, your destiny's there as long as your proximity is right in line with it. And then, you know, you can be there to make it happen.
It feels like it's supposed to be that way, yeah. It does. It's amazing. Can't say for sure if that's, you know, how it works for everybody, but I hope the rewards are there for everybody who follow their dreams, because that's what happened today.
It's awesome. Well, I mean, it's such a smaller note, but like in this world we live in and with this dead community, like, I mean, in a strange way, I feel like I'm following my dreams by being on the phone and getting to talk to you and meet all these people and share all these stories and be a part of the conversation. I mean, in what world can you be a 43-year-old mother, you know, working person and say, I want to be in the conversation and then just start doing something? And it is. It's like a dream coming true. It's, you know, it's work and following up and putting it out there. But, like, when you do what you love, it doesn't feel like work. It's so much fun, you know? Like, I wake up every morning to hear who I heard from and what I'm doing. And this is just a hobby, you know? Like, it's I don't relate in the sense that it's been a life dream, but I relate to the sense of, like, just, you know, where they can just kind of have, like, magic around just this acceptance of people when you come in, you know, and you just you want to be a part of it, and then you get to be.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And it's a, you know, it's an amazing, amazing community that, you know, you can be a part of, I can be a part of, and so many other people are a part of all across the world. It's just, it's so amazing. And I, you know, I promise you, being involved on professional levels with a lot of other bands, there's absolutely no other band in the world that has this sort of thing. It's just so wonderful.
That's really special. I mean, I couldn't imagine thinking, I want to talk to people who love, you know, again, X, Y, and Z band, and then 6 months later, be talking to people, you know, and listening, and it's, again, it's a different plane, but it's the same, it's a different plane, but of the same kind of the same planet, you know, like, it's just that, it's special. Like just the welcomingness of anybody who wants to bring something that's authentic and pure and bring some love
absolutely.
To it, you know?
Yeah. It really is great.
Well, I want to hear some music because on this podcast, we play music and we talk and we hear stories. So we picked out a couple songs that we're going to play. And, the first one that we picked was, We Can Run, and I want to hear a little bit about the inspiration behind that and the story that that brought you to this amazing group of artists, and we'll play that, and we'll come back and chat
yeah,
a little more.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah, this one is, like, really special to me because it was, you know, pretty much when I first moved to the Bay Area, I hadn't really been all that established yet, although I was definitely making way. I was lucky enough to be invited to play with Stu Allen many times, who's very established out here with a band called Mars Hotel, and originally from Mellonfield's JGB. And so that was an amazing experience. I had, through mutual people I worked with, met the promoter of the Berkeley Street Festival, who asked me to put together a band for the set. And to come up with a name. So for lack of a better name, we came up with the Scott Guberman Band. I reached out to Robin Sylvester, who's from Rat Dog, who played bass, at Alex Kofert from Celestian Friends on drums, and Stu was nice enough to agree to do it with me too, and, even lucky enough to have Sunshine Becker Garcia from, Further. Play a couple of tunes at the end with us, which is, it's just so wonderful to, you know, have all this amazing stuff happening immediately. So, yeah, this one's from that set from last year.
Well, very cool. I'm going to play that, and then we had a couple more picks with some other esteemed members and some good stories to go with it. So let's go play We Can Run, and this is at the Berkeley Street Festival. This is last summer, 2015, and
right on.
We'll be back.
Well, it's oil for the rich and babies for the poor. We got everyone. We only got one, we got a right on it. Whatever we've done, we'll never get far from what we leave behind. Baby, we can run, 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 but we can't hide.
Listening to We Can Run, and there's been so much, I'm sure, that's gone on in the last year, because, I mean, you've got so much cool stuff happening now, so I want to hear a little bit about, you know, what happened next. Last summer, Bay Area, living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream, totally, and as if things couldn't get better, you know, I'm playing regularly in the bar, and still comes in there every once in a while to eat, and, you know, Cash is me playing, and you know, sooner than later says, let's get this guy in my band Communion, and asked me to join. And, you know, I was in tears. I just, you know, just could not believe what was happening. So here I am, a permanent member of the Luscious Communion. Next thing you know, I'm, you know, doing some recreation shows with him. I ended up doing most of them, you know, which is just amazing and ironic, because, you know, when I first got there, I was on the other side and in the audience, you know, just, you know, here I am on stage playing with Phil, and literally dream come true for me.
So awesome. No, that's incredible. I mean, as a deadhead and as a musician, you know, I mean, as a deadhead, you know, getting to be close to them, again, I can almost imagine, but as a musician from, you know, early days, again, to be able to contribute, you know, your own art to it, it must be, you know, I can't even wrap my mind around how special that must be.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you could, as a deadhead. I'm sure everybody can imagine what it's like, you know, to meet these guys and, you know, to have some interaction with them. So that in itself, complete dream come true. But then, you know, there's something in addition to that as a musician. You know, for me personally, you know, I could remember listening to Box of Rain, March 19th, 1990, and, you know, while I was there at Hartford Civic Center, and, you know, listening to Phil Lesh play a certain riff on his bass and saying to myself, oh, I know exactly what I would play in response to that, or I would love to sing harmonies on this version of Box of Rain. I know exactly what I would contribute, and, you know, so to have those dreams come true, all those little tiny dreams of, you know, sitting in the audience and imagining what would my keyboard sound like through this amazing sound system in Madison Square Garden or whatever venue it might be, you know, that to have those sorts of things come true is just, I don't think anybody could truly understand unless it happened to them, but trust me, it's amazing.
Well, it's like a musical conversation. Like, again, I am a fan and an appreciator of music. I mean, I love it. It's such a huge part of my life, but I have no talent whatsoever. So, I mean, so my instrument's talking, you know? So for me, which is why I started a podcast. So for me, like, being able to, like, sit down and have a conversation must be, again, kind of what it'd be like for you with, you know, being able to share the music. Because it's like it's a conversation that you're having. Like, he plays that, then you respond with this, and then they do that. And so it's like a fleshed out, you know, dance experience. And it's just, it must be so cool. Again, I'm not a musician, but I would love to chat with them, you know, because that's my platform. That's my gift to the world, the gift of gab. So the next thing we picked out to play was at Sweetwater. So I want to hear about meeting Big Bob, because I love Phil. I love the whole band, but I am a Bobby girl. So I want to hear about your first meeting with Bob and how you ended up playing Estimated Profit with him. So I want to hear a bit about that story.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, here I am. I'm, you know, like, even after playing with, you know, the guys from the Grateful Dead, I got to play with them. playing with one core four member, which is incredible. And next thing you know, I'm invited to play at Sweetwater and with Stu Allen and Scott Law and Bob Weir shows up and says, hey, let me play a couple of tunes with you. So, you know, like another surreal, incredible moment. We got to play some really great versions of some great tunes that night. And, you know, Estimated was one of, I think, three that we did, maybe four. And just, you know, everything I could have imagined and more. All there.
Well, and that song is so perfect for your story and your experience because, you know, I mean, it's sort of a, it's an ode to California, you know, that the prophet on the golden, you know, shore. It's, you know, so it's, I mean, California's my homeland and I love living in the Northeast. I mean, I'm a reverse transplant to you, but, that's such a cool song to, again, encapsulate, you know, the opportunities and what California, you know, has brought. So I'm excited to hear it. I'm excited to play it. And it is an all-time favorite of all time. So fun.
Yeah. I remember thinking exactly what you were saying every time the chorus hit that night. So.
Yeah, you're like, it's here, you know, like it's on. It's magic. Well, let's play that, and then we have something extra special that is all you that we're going to play next. So I'm going to play for everyone from the Sweetwater, and you're playing with Scott Law and with Brahmin and with Jay Lang.
Right.
That's the prophet.
Right.
Let's enjoy it, and then we'll be right back.
Absolutely. Right on. Thank you.
California, knock on the door. Words, no, don't worry about it, no. Word.
are back from listening to Estimated Profit, and this is so fun. I mean, the podcast, we played everything on here from Fairly Well and Dead and Company and Further, but I love that this is the first time that I've actually got to play music with the musician that I'm talking to. So this is a groundbreaking podcast. So thank you
very
so much.
Cool.
It's thrilling. No, it really is. I mean, me and my guests have talked about someone else's music, but I've never got to play your music, you know. So this is a dream come true for me. So,
well, I'm just
right?
Performed the music in these instances. It certainly isn't my music. I wish it was, but I didn't write anything.
It belongs to all of us. It belongs to all of us.
Absolutely.
It belongs to all of us. It does. So we had first talked, you had mentioned, and then I got a chance to listen to it, actually watch it, because it was on YouTube, a performance of Dark Star, where you do the vocals and the keyboards. So tell me a little bit about how this came about.
Yeah, Jambase.com, they decided to get some musicians basically from all over the country who were involved in playing Grateful Dead music and asked them to do a video each. So we went down to the office, which is in San Francisco. I was asked by a couple of different bands. I think I ended up doing four different videos. And while I was there with one of the bands contributing a song, they had a list of what they wanted to have performed, you know, which songs they wanted to have performed. And I said, this was kind of late in the game already. I said, which ones haven't you had performed? And one of the few was Dark Star. And immediately I said, well, that's mine. Let me do it. I said, if you want, I would love to.
So, let me check the box. That's it. Let me put the name in the spot. Oh, that's so cool. I mean, that's such a, that song is, it's transcends, right? I mean, the keyboards and it's special.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in case you didn't get the idea before, what blows me away about the Grateful Dead is the psychedelic experience, the awareness that there's a relationship between drugs and music, and it's a magical one, psychedelic drugs specifically. And because of all my psychedelic abuse, I lost track of what I was saying.
Well, Dark Star is like a psychedelic adventure. You know, the song changes. And, I mean, Dark Star's the song that during the acid test they would play for an hour, you know. I mean, it would take in every direction, like wherever their trip was going. Dark Star isn't really a sequential song. I mean, absolutely.
Thank you for getting me back on track. Yeah, so for me, you know, the most favorite point of the Grateful Dead was, somewhere in the middle of second set, which would be, you know, the most psychedelic stuff, the drums, bass, Dark Star, playing in the band, Estimated Profit, those sorts of long exploratory psychedelic jams was really what it was all about in relation to the rest of the concert, which the whole thing was just amazing. Dark Star for me definitely sums up that whole, that really gives, I think, any musician a chance to really go out there, and obviously gave this Grateful Dead a chance to get out there with it. And so, you know, once I heard that was available, I said, you know, when we're done with this recording, please let me give that a shot. And I did, and that's what this is.
Well, and you sang too, so I mean, it's it's kind of everything, you know. I mean, you get the experience of like feeling the music and playing, but there's something about Dark Star that, again, is so exploratory, yet there are some structures and boundaries to it because of the lyrics. So it's kind of everything all at once, right?
It really is. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely.
Because the space and drums is so cool, but it's different every time. And Dark Star is different every time, but there is that, again, the sequentialness of it in the sense that there's lyrics that go with it. So you kind of go everywhere, but you're still staying within a song, you know? So it's kind of everything all together.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
That's a very psychedelic statement, I guess.
What's that?
I said it's a bit of a psychedelic statement, I guess. It's everything and nothing all at once, you know, which is...
These things are so hard to put in words, but I always appreciated Tom Constantin's statement on it, which was something to the effect of, Dark Star is always going, and you just join it when you play the performance.
No, oh, I can see that. No, it's special. It's funny. In an early podcast, the podcast has been all over the place. But shout out to Ian Bernstein, my podcast number 7, I want to say, or not 7, 8. He'd never been to a show, and he's 17 years old. This kid is 17 years old. He lives in Florida, and his parents were Deadheads. And, I mean, he was, like, more tuned in to the catalog than many, many people, you know, which is just, it's just incredible, right? This kid is, you know, at home. And Dark Star was his pick, and he was so funny because he wanted it from a show I wasn't able to download. And then we looked through the catalog, and they always played Dark Star back in like 68 or 66. And that was where all the exploration came from. So we talked a little bit about it there. So again, it's really special to go from, you know, to hear everyone's perspective and to get you here at play it. So very cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's enjoy that. And then we will come back and do a little goodbye.
Thanks.
So I'm Scott Guberman. I'm doing a song called Dark Star, penned by Garcia Hunter. I chose Dark Star because I certainly thought that it was probably something that hasn't been done at least too much on solo piano and singing. It's also a song that really, for me, epitomizes the Grateful Dead in terms of what they do with form and formlessness. Transitive night all around.
just reflections of matter.
Darkstar, and we're just going to say a little sign off and goodbye and a thank you. And when I say thank you, I have to mention that we're, you know, we do the recordings before I make the podcast, obviously. And today is Wednesday, the 23rd of November. So tomorrow's Thanksgiving. So I feel like this is a really, like, grateful and thankful podcast to have, you know, for this time of
year. Absolutely. And happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody.
Thank you. So you stay on the West Coast with your West Coast family. I'm assuming you're not heading out late tonight.
Yeah, Coast. Hanging out with my Grateful Dead West Coast family, luckily enough. We all celebrated actually on Monday. Phil Lesh and friends did a show. It was actually Phil Lesh and the Terrapin Family Band. We did a show and had dinner before then. They sold some tickets to just the dinner. And then they sold some tickets to just a performance afterwards. It was just a really fun night all together.
That's awesome. Well, I think family can be friends and friends can be family, and it's just all about, you know, who you make your family in your life. You know, your family's your family, but your friends can become your family, and I don't know, sometimes it's even more special. Something to be grateful for. Absolutely. Well, I am grateful for you, like, just, you know, coming on the podcast, and I can't wait for everyone to hear it and to share your music, this is just so much fun, and thank you.
Thank you. Glad I got to do it.
All right. Well, we're going to be in touch. I'm going to be out in California over the holidays, so if you're home, I will come to Terrapin and maybe hopefully catch you playing, and nothing would make me happier than to meet you and your beautiful wife and give you a big hug in person and hear some tunes. So
be wonderful.
You're there. I'm hoping to meet you. Yeah. All right. Well, then, thank you everyone for joining, and I will say until we meet in person, thank
Likewise.
You
thank
so
you
much.
Guys. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Everybody's praying in the heart of those